accession number 18269, reel 6.
Jindal reel 6.
Right. Well, while we're in this area, it's in what I would call relatively dry secondary jungle, which meant that the trees were not terribly high, but there was a lot of scrub and shrubbery on the ground level. Here we did training for jungle warfare, which was something completely new. I remember distinctly on one occasion we were still in khaki drill uniform, tropical uniform, and I remember teaching my platoon how their uniform happened to match in very well with the dead leaves in banana plantations. And also teaching them how to conceal themselves behind trees and shrubs in such a way that they were able to use their weapons but couldn't be seen by the enemy. We also did one or two 48-hour jungle treks by platoon so that people would get used to travelling off the beaten track and finding their way by compass, if necessary, from one area to another. In this way, I was able to show my platoon the historical ruins at Polonnaruwa, including the huge reclining Buddha. And during one of those excursions, I remember forcing my way past a bush and stirring up a snake, large brown snake, which looked to be 5 or 6 feet long. We did find that this area of Ceylon was full of snakes of one kind or another, the most dangerous one being a krite, which was only about 18 inches long, if that, with black and white bands, not lengthwise stripes, but cross bands. And the other one, which was rather frightening, was what they called a green whip snake, which could, well, when I saw it, it was travelling over the tops of bushes with the greatest of ease, and very quickly at that. After a while, our platoons took it in turn to go to an isolated job down on the east coast, at a place called Velachene, some 10 miles north of Batacaloa. the single track railway in branch short near Habarani. One branch went on up to Trincomalee, the other branch swerved round to the east and went down to the east coast and ultimately on to Batacaloa. before one got to the coast, There's a broad saltwater lagoon which was crossed by a road rail combined bridge some 200 yards long, and platoon deployment there was to, in case of Japanese invasion on the coast, was to defend and hold this bridge until such time as the sappers had been able to blow it up. In the end, the Japanese didn't invade Ceylon, although on Easter Sunday that year, they bombed both Colombo Harbour and Trincomalee. And a week or two earlier, our naval air fleet had sunk two cruisers off the east coast. If I remember rightly, the Dorsetshire was one of them. Well, my platoon was on detachment by this bridge. Two fellows went off to do a reconnaissance of jungle tracks, and one of the two developed either heat stroke or cerebral malaria, because he more or less collapsed in a matter of an hour or so. And it was a long time before the other chap could get back to camp, in fact at night time. And by the time we got the platoon truck to him to pick him up, he was pretty obviously at the last stages, because he was foaming at the mouth and obviously suffering from extremely high temperature. And although we dashed off the nearest doctor, who said he couldn't do anything, we aroused him about 1 o'clock in the morning, I should think. He just said, go on to the hospital at Batacolo, which we did. But in the course of the journey there, about the next half hour or so, quite obviously the poor chap had died. as a consequence of that, we had to leave him at the hospital. but as with all deaths in the tropics, the doctor in charge of the hospital said he's got to be buried before sundown. And so we had to arrange a military funeral with great assistance from the local district commissioner, who happened to live quite close by. He was duly buried with full military honours. And in a sense, he was not alone, because several other sailors from the Dorsetshire and the other cruiser had already been washed ashore and buried in the same church graveyard. After that, we seemed to do an exchange of duties about every 6 weeks with the 2nd Battalion of the Leicesters. They relieved us at Habarani while we went back to a camp at a place called Peradenia, just outside Kandy. And the hutted camp which we used I understand, is now the site of Ceylon University. There we couldn't do anything much in the way of jungle training. They did attempt a bit of formal drill and parades, but I remember one CO's parade which they attempted to do carry out in the botanical gardens at Peradeniya. Apparently wasn't very successful. This pleased me because I had no time at all for drills and parades. About the only exercise I can remember doing there was a night journey. It was part of training exercise for senior officers and communications, I should imagine. We had to go up into the mountains to a place called Neuralia, and then on a road from there through the mountain area again towards Batacaloa. I think possibly because I had had a week's leave in this Neuralia, which was a well-known hill station, I found myself leading the convoy up this mountain road, up what was known as Elephant Pass, and up to Neuralia, where fortunately I took the right turning, and I remember a little episode there was that just at crack of dawn, the sun was just about to come up, and whereas the convoy was supposed to be stopped at, say, 6:30 in the morning, I went on for about a couple of minutes so that A, they could see around the next bend, and B, you would also automatically see the sun. And the result of that, the adjutant sent a dispatch right up to the front to ask why I'd stopped the column 2 minutes late. to which I just said, oh, well, I said, it did stop on time according to my watch, and I heard nothing more about it. And when one thinks about it, I don't think any attempt had been made to coordinate watches before the exercise started. However, as far as the exercise is concerned, we probably drove on for about another hour and a half or so, and then I suppose we must have been stopped by some umpires who told us that we'd all been wiped out. So for the rest of that exercise, we had nothing to do and nothing to worry about. For the rest of the time in Ceylon, I don't think very much happened one way or another. The battalion itself took part in an exercise right up the extreme northern end of Ceylon. I did not participate in that because I'd been posted as an umpire with a battalion of the King's African Rifles. There again, all I can recall is that the contingent I was with were told that they had been wiped out, And so there was very little activity at all. All I remember is that riding back to on a motorcycle by on my own on some jungle road, a small monkey leapt out of the forest or jungle, and I caught it with my left foot, but whether it was killed or not, I don't know. But anyway, it didn't cause me to fall off the motorbike. Shortly after that, one or two of us went down again, in my case, again, with amoebic dysentery. And so I had to go into hospital again in Kandy. While two or three of us were in hospital, the battalion itself was moved to go up to go into India. So we were left, two of us were left behind. And when we were fit enough to move, we were very fortunately invited by a tea planter to convalesce for about 3 weeks in his bungalow at Holoya, which is quite high up in the hills, at approximately 6,000 feet above sea level, I think. This was a very pleasant place. We were very kindly looked after. It had a very English garden with rose beds and a swimming pool. And the tea planter's wife insisted on us both having a 2 hour siesta every afternoon. After about 3 weeks, we ourselves, the two of us, travelled independently from Colombo by train through Ceylon, crossed over to India, and went by train, of course, to Madras. There, I think we may have stayed a night. But anyway, almost immediately, we managed to get onto the Calcutta Mail, which, if I remember rightly, took 3 or 4 days to get to Calcutta. And from Calcutta, we must have gone by train, because the battalion then was based at a place called Ranchi.
About what date have we reached now?
This would have been March 1943. Three. Yes. Later on, the whole battalion moved down to Bangalore, which is quite a pleasant area, not too hot, and not given to a lot of rain except during the monsoon.
What were you doing in Bangalore?
Well, that's it. I can't remember anything very specific in the way of training in Bangalore. But the next thing I can recall is that apparently the the defence platoon at divisional headquarters had reputedly deserted together with the paymaster's money safe, which was normally kept in the guardroom.
Which division was this?
70th Div, 70 Div it was called then. As a consequence of this, apparently the Queen's Battalion was called upon to provide a new defence platoon, as they called it. I found myself selected to be in command of this platoon, which, of course, consisted of specially picked troops. In other words, about 30 infantrymen and a platoon sergeant and myself.
This is at Bangalore?
We were at the Bangalore area at the time, yes.
How far into 43 have we got now?
About April, I think. Yes, April. Only about a month left, further on. April 43. I found that life at divisional headquarters was really quite pleasant. I found in practice that the platoon was mostly required to provide the camp guard room and, of course, night guards. We didn't have anything much in the way of training, but if we ever moved, I always assumed that any enemy attack most probably be by air, and so whenever the camp moved, I set the platoon around the camp with the Bren guns mounted on the anti-aircraft tripod, simply because that seemed to be the best thing to do them. no one ever told me anything about what to do or when. And in general, I just found myself as deputy camp commandant.
Do you think it was true that the previous defence platoon had deserted with the money?
Well, I don't know. Some of the Scots, it was a black watch, you see, and if they were, some of the Scots were rather rough diamonds. But quite frankly, I find it rather difficult to believe. The only rather exceptional episode at DHQ camp was that on one or two occasions a hurricane plane had carried out very low-level strafing attacks on the camp. And we remarked that the plane was coming down as low as about 50 feet. And we thought, well, and of course, the plane being so close, caused tremendous roars. It went overhead. And I think we can just say that that the ordinary personnel in the camp certainly disapproved of this behaviour. About the second day, I remember watching this plane in the afternoon, and after a time it moved away from our particular camp, but I saw a mile or so away over the treetops that it was coming, zooming down incredibly low. And then all of a sudden I saw it disappear behind trees, and then what next? Burst of black smoke. I got on a motorbike. This was only about a mile or mile and a half away. So I got on a motorbike and managed to find a track which led off the road into the right direction. And I did find this plane without much trouble. And he'd nosedived, really just nosedived into a sort of deep ditch, or nullah as they call them in India. The plane itself didn't appear to be damaged much, but I could see the pilot leaning forward. His canopy had broken off. And I could see him leaning forward, and it looked as though his hair was singed. But the plane didn't seem to have been badly burnt. So I went back to the camp and organised a section of my platoon to set up a tent and keep guard over the plane and the pilot, who was quite obviously dead. And on the way back to the camp, some local villagers more or less insisted that I was entertained by them. And although neither of us could speak the other party's language, they were obviously very rural peasants, and their welcoming gift happened to be a glass of milk, which was still warm through having been milked out of either a goat or some creature. I didn't much like the idea of it, but anyway, I swallowed the milk, and that seemed to please them. And I'm glad to say that I didn't suffer any ill consequences. The very next morning, the trailer lorry came from the nearby airfield to pick up the plane. Apparently the pilot had been an Australian. The next episode.